Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is Pure Evil, the sentencing of Aiden Fucci. Immerse yourself in the gripping courtroom audio as justice unfolds in the chilling case of Tristan Bailey's murder. Witness the raw emotion, the powerful testimonies, and the unfiltered truth of Pure Evil, the sentencing of Aiden Fucci.
We are now up to segment number 5 in the sentencing of Aiden Fucci. It's raw courtroom audio. Let's head there now.
So just kind of circuit call, return to order.
I'll be seated. Thank you.
All right, back on the record.
Yeah. Can I just ask a tiny question before we continue?
Okay.
Just to make some decisions.
Ms. Peoples said 15 minutes, so let's give her 30 minutes. Essentially, I just want to know when Your Honor wants to stop for the day so we can make some decisions, because we would be moving next into family after that, or we could pick that up in the morning. I'm just trying to, does Your Honor want to be done 4:30 or 5?
How many witnesses do you have, or family impact, victim impact statements do you have left?
We plan to present 6 family members and members from the community. Depending on if we go today or tomorrow, it'll depend on who's here. We're not getting to all of that today, is my point. We could start and go into tomorrow, or depending on the breaking time.
We'll plan to go till 5 o'clock or so.
Okay, and then we'll just see.
Then address. Because we had just filed a motion regarding the victim impact.
Let's finish with this witness.
Yeah.
We'll move into your motion, and then we'll see where we're at.
All right. Thank you.
I did receive your motion. I just saw it.
Thank you.
All right. You may proceed for cross.
Dr. Pritchard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So I have received your CV. We're not going to go through all of it today. But in your past, you were a senior psychologist with the Florida State Hospital.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And part of your work there, Florida State Hospital and with juveniles in Apalachicola. So you've 2 different locations, but you've worked with the state in different locations.
Yes, ma'am, but Florida State Hospital was not juveniles. Those were adults. The Apalachicola Forest Youth Camp is juveniles.
Right, so Chattahoochee with adults, Apalachicola with children.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And you've evaluated, fair to say, countless individuals for Baker Acts.
Yes.
All right. And a Baker Act's a form of civil commitment.
Yes, ma'am.
And a person is Baker Acted if they're likely to suffer from neglect or post threat or harm to themselves. There's a laundry list, but in a nutshell.
Right. Harm to self or others or will suffer from neglect. Yes.
All right. And a person who cuts himself, they may be depressed.
Yes, they may be depressed.
All right. There could be other reasons, but that could be one of them.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And a person who neglects to shower or wash their hair, again, this may be an indication that this individual is depressed.
Yes, it could be.
All right. And a person who doesn't change their clothes, again, could be depressed. Not caring for themselves in general.
Right. You're speaking to kind of hygiene issues, and we do see that sometimes, yes, in people who are depressed.
All right. And some people who are depressed are also suicidal.
Yes.
All right. And a person who's experiencing, for example, delusions or hallucinations, they may be suffering or under the influence of illicit drugs.
That can happen, yes.
All right. And sometimes individuals are experiencing delusions or hallucinations and disorganized speech, again, could be too much alcohol, too much drug use.
Yes.
All right. Is it fair to say that also an individual who's experiencing delusions, hallucinations, disorganized speech, and I know there are more to that list, could also be experiencing symptoms of schizophrenia, per se, if they had that ongoing for a few months, maybe six?
Yes, it could represent what you're describing, delusions, hallucinations. It's psychotic experience, disorganization also. So yes, those are some of the characteristics that can be seen in schizophrenia.
All right. Now, regarding adolescent brain, the brain development is not complete until the mid-20s.
That is scientific fact, yes.
All right. Not up for debate.
Right.
Okay. And an adolescent tends to use the part of the brain that's more emotional, more impulsive.
Yes, that's part of the aspect of the not fully developed brain, is they tend to be more impulsive and more emotionally driven and don't think things through very well.
And that's characteristic of children.
Right, it's characteristic of all children on the planet who have not, their brains haven't fully developed yet, mid-20s or so. So yes, it's typically a characteristic of children.
And unlike a child, an adult brain developed, or an adult brain that is developed, it'll have, the adult brain that is, greater cognitive control, meaning an ability to weigh out a risk.
That's true.
Okay. And an adolescent, as they grow, that prefrontal cortex or that area of the frontal lobe will start to mature.
Yes, that's the last part of the brain to mature, but yes, it keeps maturing up through late adolescence and into early adulthood.
And unlike a child, an adult with a mature prefrontal cortex will reason better, develop more impulse control, and just make better judgments. Is that fair?
Well, in theory, there's a lot of adults who don't
yes.
do that, but yes, that's the idea, is when the prefrontal cortex is fully developed, that tends to lend to better reasoning and better judgment, less impulsivity, more better able to project risks and consequences, that type of thing.
And that ability or that final formation of that part of the brain is mid-20s.
Yes.
Okay. Granted, as you said earlier, there's some adults never really get there.
Right.
Okay. But children, they're not there at all.
Yeah, they don't have the fully developed brain, so they are not there. It doesn't mean that all children have bad judgments, because some don't at all, but they are more at risk of that because of that not fully formed prefrontal cortex.
Now, is it also fair to say that I heard what you said, but children then lack self-control, or impulse control is the word I should say.
That's one of the risks, yes. And again, all kids aren't impulsive. You know, it's kind of on a spectrum. So, but they're more at risk of being more impulsive as children because their brains aren't fully developed.
And on that same line, then, they're not making well-reasoned judgments.
They're not making judgments that are consistent with as good as it will be for them when their brain's fully developed.
All right. Is cutting a form of self-injury?
Yes.
And is cutting a form of self-injury that can have several motivations?
Yes.
Okay. And is it a common reason, not the only, but a common reason that individuals will cut to distract from emotional pain?
Yes. That is one of the dynamics involved in cutting behavior sometimes.
Right. And is it also, again, not the only, but a common reason that some individuals are cutting to distract from the emotional pain, because the intensity of the physical pain will distract from that emotion that they don't want to deal with?
Yes, that's the idea.
All right. Now, is it fair to describe middle schoolers that are participating in drug use as risky behavior?
Yes, that's fair.
Is it fair to describe middle schoolers that are participating in group sex as risky behavior?
Yes.
All right. And is it fair to describe middle schoolers that are not, as a group, because kids tend to work together in groups that are not listening or obeying their parents on some simple rules, like stay home, would be, again, risky behavior.
Yes.
All right. Now, you did not evaluate Aiden.
That's correct.
All right. And you're a trained psychologist, and you did not administer any psychological evaluations on Aiden.
Right. I can't if I don't see him. So.
Right. You didn't see him. You didn't evaluate him.
Right.
All right, then. And with that same line, then, you didn't give any specific test in terms of testing for his executive functioning.
I didn't know.
All right. And in terms of Aiden's intellectual functioning, you didn't give any specific test for that.
That's correct.
And then you did receive a large number of school records, correct?
Yes, a lot of pages.
And within that large body of school records, you didn't see any psychological tests that were administered to Aiden Fucci?
I did not. I didn't see a single one.
All right. And within those school records, his IQ in relation to the response or the result of a test was not present.
Right. I did not see any that any formal IQ testing was done with Mr. Fucci in school.
So today you don't know if Aiden's verbal versus his nonverbal IQ, what those numbers would be.
I can't say.
And if there's a difference between Aiden's full-scale IQ and predicted IQ, again, you have no ability to opine on that.
No, not really even having talked to Aiden at all. If I talked to him, I could probably give an impression, but I wasn't able to talk to him.
Now, in school, and I'm not asking you line and page, but fair to say that on several of the school years, he was scoring ones and twos on the FSAs.
Yes. I mean, it was real consistent in language, arts, and math, as I indicated. I think it was grade 3, 4, 5 on up, maybe once in science. Sometimes he scored twos. I never saw him score 3 or higher on that Florida Standard Assessment.
And by the time he's in 8th grade, he's not reading. Well, it's not 8th grade, but for the majority of his school years, he wasn't reading at grade level.
No. I mean, the last IEP when he was in 8th grade that was in April of 2021 indicated he was reading at the 6th grade level, so it would have been 2 grade levels behind in that skill.
One moment, Your Honor. Near the end of the questioning with the state, you provided an opinion.
I mean, I imagine I did. I think I may have provided more than one, so I'm not really sure what you're referring to.
Yes. Well, you didn't evaluate Aiden. You didn't provide any tests to Aiden.
Right.
Correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And as a trained psychologist, you know best practices would be to actually perform an evaluation upon him.
Right. Best practices to do that. The desire is to do that. But if we can't do it, it doesn't mean we're not able to perform an evaluation. We're just, relatively speaking, there's a limitation that I mentioned. So we have the records we can evaluate him on, but I couldn't evaluate him in terms of what he had to offer me or doing any testing specifically with him.
So today, without an evaluation, you can't give an opinion about any personality disorder, or I should say his IQ, for example, where there's actual testing. You cannot provide an opinion on that.
No, I can't without seeing some hard data, which I don't have.
Now, how much do you bill the state per hour on this case?
I bill $250 an hour.
And ultimately, because I know your final billing hasn't gone in, how many hours will you bill on this case?
I mean, I would just be guessing at this point. I haven't I haven't added it up, but I would say probably 50 hours, maybe a little more, a little less.
All right. One moment, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor. Dr. Pritchard, Ms. Peoples asked you in the very beginning, after she asked you about Baker Act information, about people that cut themselves. Could that be a sign of depression? And I believe you said it can. And she offered up and agreed there could be several motivations, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Do you recall a specific reason Mr. Fucci gave his friend Michaela Harris about a cutting incident? If you don't, I can direct you.
I don't know. I can't pull it up right now.
Okay.
So,
You would refer to page 11, the first full paragraph of your report, when you're relying on Michaela Harris for some of the emotional and mental health.
Okay, so page 11, first paragraph.
First full, where it says MH.
Okay.
Just read that, and it might refresh your memory about the cutting.
Yes.
Okay. At least one comment he's made about cutting. What was that?
Well, he said that when he saw that Michaela cut herself, he thought it was the coolest thing. And according to Michaela, Mr. Fucci indicated that he had cut himself one time.
Okay. Ms. Peoples asked you a lot of questions about, and the obvious answer of no, you didn't evaluate him, you didn't test him. Would you have liked to?
Yes.
Okay. You were not allowed to?
I was not allowed to.
Okay. And you've described it's limited as you have to. It's... Without that, you're limited in how far you can go, and you stayed within the records review in this case and provided opinions, correct?
Yes.
Meaning you didn't provide a mental health diagnosis of Aiden Fucci?
I did not provide a mental health diagnosis, and, you know, I stopped short of providing some opinions that I might have otherwise been able to provide because I wasn't given the opportunity to see him, but... I've stated, I had a lot of information on which to draw conclusions and opinions.
And then ultimately, Ms. Peoples went through some of the science or psychology that we understand is accepted commonly in your field about youth and brain development. And you agree with all of that, correct?
I do agree with all of that. It's scientific fact. I mean, that's why the juvenile laws were made, because they're not fully developed and they're different than adults. So, yes, I believe in all of that.
Okay. So just so the court's clear, you're not here disagreeing with those general principles of juveniles?
Oh, not at all. No.
Okay. What have you done then based on accepting that premise of juveniles? They're generally immature. They're young, and their brains aren't developed. Knowing that information, are you drawing a distinction about this crime as it relates to that knowledge about juveniles?
Yeah, I am, and that's the thing. It's again, and I've said this several times, all juveniles on the planet, their brains are not fully developed. Okay, that doesn't mean that we're going to see egregious behavior from them necessarily. Occasionally we do, and we need to consider the variables. So the unique thing with Mr. Fucci is, given all of the... He's the same status with a not completely developed brain as every juvenile on the planet, and understanding that and acknowledging that, he still chooses to do something that is extremely rare for his group of peers, the sample we compare him to. So that's the relevant point. For him as an individual, even though we know all this other stuff about juveniles in general, it's extremely rare and very, very different.
Okay. No further questions.
All right. May this witness be excused. All right. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
All right, at this time, that would conclude the testimonial portion other than victim impact statements for the state.
Yes, Your Honor. We're going to take,
I think, a portion of her motion now, and then if I could just confer and make a decision on whether we start today or tomorrow, that would be
okay.
Great.
All right, Ms. Peoples, I did receive your motion to strike cumulative. I believe there's a typo in this motion, but... cumulative community letters and restrict victim impact evidence. You do have that motion in front of me. I'll hear from you at this time.
Your Honor, defense would move to strike the, I believe it's in excess of 130, nearly 150 letters that are.
You're going to have to move to the podium.
So we had filed a motion to strike the community letters and restrict the victim impact evidence in this specific case. Miller v. Alabama, and that's the basis for Florida Statute 921-1401, is governed or is in keeping with Miller v. Alabama. These statutes are written because children are supposed to be treated different and kids are different. Aiden Fucci is before the court. He has been direct filed on an indictment of first-degree murder, and he's entered a guilty plea to that offense. And we're here before the court for a sentencing hearing. However, the nature and the volume of the letters that have been placed before the court is now raising concern, and that's why we're filing this motion, that the court would consider these, would in essence deny him his constitutional right to a fair hearing at this juncture. So we're asking the court to strike the letters. I understand that the state is arguing that on 921-1401, that there's two different subsections addressing the community. But we're now dealing with a volume and relevancy issues that are overborne our ability as defense counsel to represent Mr. Fucci. So I'm asking the court to strike the letters and that in terms of the victim impact, again, the state will rely on the same statute, 1401, in terms of having the family speak and address the court. And it's not uncommon to have family members come before the court on criminal matters or any criminal matter. The issue is the content of what they're before the court with. So we've placed before the court a motion addressing these issues that including the victim impact, there are restrictions and that they're not free to trample over the defendant's constitutional rights. So we filed the motion, Your Honor. We're asking to have a reduction in keeping with, and I know the case is cited here that it's a thumb rule of four members of the family to address the court and not have, I believe the state has indicated it was 6 and 4, so 10 individuals before the court for the purpose of victim impact and effect on the community. And then I'll rely on the motion for the additional argument. Thank you.
Thank you. Stay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, the first, I think, issue with the defense's argument is that the quote-unquote rule of thumb that she cites applies very specifically to death penalty cases. And as the court is well aware, the reason for those rules is that courts have time and again said death is different. Those cases are very unique. The other part is that those are victim impact statements that will be presented to a jury who's going to be decide whether the defendant, whether to recommend a death sentence or not. We're not in that type of case. There's no jury here that's making any decisions. Only Your Honor is making that decision. So those cases are don't apply under this circumstance. One of the issues that they have is that the number of letters in this particular case, this is a very unique case in that, you know, a lot of the cases we have affect only a small handful of people, family members and maybe a few friends. And the victim impact statements that are given in this case correspond with that type of impact. This case is unique in that it had a wide-ranging impact on this community. The Bailey family is a large and loving family. There's not just mother, father, sisters, brothers. There's grandparents, there's cousins, there's people in this community who are greatly impacted by this particular case. People that Tristan Bailey went to school with. All of them were invested in Tristan Bailey, and this greatly affected them. The only case that the defense cited for dealing with the number of cases was this Hamilton case, and that case is distinguishable from this case in this respect. In that particular case, and this was really dicta in the case, because the court had already overturned the conviction in the case for other reasons, and it made this side note that during the sentencing hearing, the prosecutor in that case told the judge that he had a petition that had 3,000 signatures on it that demanded the maximum sentence. Well, this is different in this respect. We don't have a petition demanding the highest sentence. We have 130 letters, approximately, from each of these individuals who are going to tell the court exactly how this crime affected them. It's not a demand that the court sentence Aiden Fucci to life. It is specifically to say this is how this crime that was committed by this defendant affected me personally. The other part of this is when it comes to these victim impact statements, they're only one factor that the court has to consider. We're not going to sit up here and tell Your Honor that you should only listen to these 130 letters. That's only one factor the court can consider. What we're going to tell the court is everything that the court has heard today in terms of all of the other factors in the sentencing statute, the court should consider. This is only one part of that. And again, as I said before, this is not to a jury where there's a risk that the jury can be so overwhelmed by the sheer number of letters or sentiments. The court can look at these letters in the proper context and can decide what is appropriate to consider and what's not appropriate. And I trust the court's judgment to do that.
All right. Thank you. Anything else from the defense?
Your Honor, the state provided Serrano v. State, and there are distinctions between Serrano v. State and Aiden Fucci. There is an objection, and that was one of the first issues that they addressed, that there was no objection in the lower court in Serrano v. State, and that there's some indication that the court considered the family member's opinion at sentencing, which we're trying to address right now. So I would say that this is distinct in that, again, that the Eighth Amendment, that we've had several cases, even since Serrano, identifying that these particular juvenile cases, that the kids are different, death is different, but that we treat these juvenile cases with the same attention that we do with the death cases, that it's heightened by nature of the age of the defendant and by nature of the direct file. So I understand the state has provided this case. I do believe that there are some distinctions, and that in the case that we did put forth before the court, that the state is correct, it was a petition. So you're looking at a couple of pages with thousands of signatures. The distinction here is that we're not dealing with one petition, we're dealing with in excess of 130 letters. So I do think there's some similarity with the case that we presented in the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, and I'm just gonna just speak again, she mentioned the Serrano case, which I didn't mention before, but I had emailed that to her, and I emailed it to your J.
I have not seen it. So
Ms. Davis, I think, was going to ask her to send it to you because I didn't have your
Maybe
email,
she
Judge.
She did, but I hadn't checked my email since we've been sitting here.
So I can give you the case site, Judge.
Well, let me see if she sent it to me. I have it sent at 4:21.
You did receive it?
I received it 5 minutes ago.
Let me
look at it real quick.
And it just simply said that the family is permitted to address what they would like to see the court do with the sentence.
It was emailed to me, 279 Southern 3rd, 296, Serrano v. State. I'm going to deny the defense motion to strike cumulative community letters and restrict victim impact evidence. First of all, the court has begun reading the, is it 130 State? Is that a correct number?
It's approximately.
Okay.
I know we submitted a little over 130 or approximately. The family did come into possession of a few more just this morning. It handed me a few more, once from a direct family member that we were going to submit.
I have begun reading them. I do agree with the defense in the one aspect, and that is that many of them do request a particular sentence, obviously. The court is not reading or reviewing the community impact letters and taking that into consideration, but certainly I am taking into consideration the statements or the impact that this crime had on the family or the community itself, pursuant to, again, 921.1401. So I'm not going to strike any of the community letters. I will obviously review them for the relevant value, which is, again, in determining under 921.1401 the effect of the crime on the victim's family and on the community at large. All right, so that motion is denied. Let's talk about the number of impact statements that you plan to present.
Your Honor, there are two persons here today that wouldn't be able to return, so I figured I could start with them, and then we could pick up in the morning, if Your Honor would like, after that.
Right, how many total are we going to present?
There's six direct family members. And then we have six from community members, which would be an assortment of teachers, coaches, and good friends, juvenile friends of Ms. Bailey.
Well,
some are to be read by, one is going to be read by Mr. Johnson, one's read by the victim advocate, and the rest would be in person.
Are those letters, the ones that are going to be read by the victim advocate and Mr. Johnson, are those community individuals or are those family members?
Those would be not family. They would be, they're from the community in right. close relationship to
I have family. A copy of those?
No, you do not. These
right.
We
present,
held these back.
Present those to me and I will read those myself. I don't need them to be read in open court. If they're from family members, that would be different.
Okay.
But we were already looking at 12 victim impact statements, so we're going to reduce that at least by those two. I will review those letters myself.
Yes, sir.
The victim impact statements from the family members, obviously, we'll hear from all of them. And then the other, I guess, four community letters or community impact statements you can present. Now, are two of those going to be read today?
Yes, sir.
All right. Do you want them to sit in the witness stand?
I think I'd rather have them sit just in case.
That'll be fine.
Okay. Now, at this time, the state would call Bree Cherry.
I'm sorry.
Bree Cherry.
All right. Ms. Cherry, go ahead and have a seat in the witness stand. Make yourself comfortable and try to speak into that microphone, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right.
And Ms. Cherry, before you just read your letter, for the record, state your name and your relationship to Tristan Bailey.
Yes, my full name is Brianna, B-R-E-A-N-N-A, last name Cherry, And I was Tristan's all-star cheerleading coach.
Okay. And you can go ahead and read your letter.
Okay. Good afternoon, Your Honor. As I just stated, my name is Bree Cherry, and I was Tristan Bailey's all-star cheerleading coach. I've always referred to my athletes as my cheer children because that's what they are. During peak season, I would spend more time with my cheer children than I did my own biological ones at home. In the cheer world, not only do these kids become yours, but these teammates become family. They spend countless hours in the gym, forming a sisterhood through blood, sweat, tears, hugs, high fives, and hit zeros, which is when they hit a perfect routine. It's an unbreakable bond we all experience in a community like no other. I tell you all this so you can get a small grasp of what Tristan meant to her coaches, her gym, and her cheer sisters. There's nothing in the coach's handbook that could have ever prepared me for what I would face on the horrific day that was May 9, 2021. I was in Orlando, Florida, coaching at the Cheerleading Worlds, where just 1 week before, I stood in the exact same spot with Tristan as she competed at the summit.
Ms. Cherry, do me a favor, just pull that microphone a little away, farther away from
you. I'm sorry about that.
You're bound to sit quite close to
it. Okay. The summit was the Super Bowl of cheerleading for Tristan's team and age group. We were on top of the world after having an incredible showing at the biggest competition of the year. We were so excited for the future of these young athletes and all of the incredible talent we would be starting the new season with. Then 1 week later, our lives changed forever, and not for the better. Aiden Fucci selfishly took Tristan away from so many people who loved and needed her. Our team lost its leader. These athletes lost their sister. And I lost a piece of my heart that I'll never be able to get back. I wrote this letter to speak out for myself, but to also speak on behalf of Tristan's cheer sisters, whose lives will never be the same. Tristan's teammates' ages ranged from 8 years old to 13 years old. And the impact didn't just stop at Tristan's teammates and coaches. You see, we had 200 athletes in our gym, and those athletes have siblings, parents, aunts, cousins, grandparents, etc. All of these people make up our gym family. When you have the heart and the personality that Tristan did, your impact stretches far beyond those in your immediate corner. We all gathered to grieve, and the image of these kids on their knees screaming and sobbing as no adult could console them will be etched into my memory forever. In the days to come, not only are we mourning the loss of Tristan, but we're forced to hear the horrific details of what happened to this person we love so much. How do you tell an 8-year-old child it's going to be okay when they have to hear from the world around them that she was brutally murdered by her schoolmate? It's our job to protect our children. And due to the nature of this crime, there is no way to hide these details from these babies. These details will continue to haunt each and every one of us on a daily basis. There is nothing we can do to fix the hurt, remove the fear, or bring Tristan back. And unfortunately, as these kids get older, the pain will only become more severe as they bring their own children into the world and try to protect them from evil. I come to the court pleading for the maximum sentence for Aiden Fucci. Even more, I beg and plead that the person reading this letter 25 years from now will think about all these kids and what they've been through. The complete fear and terror we would all feel knowing, the complete fear and terror we would all feel should any sort of release ever be considered. The Bailey family and each and every person who knew and loved Tristan has endured enough. Because of his age, Aiden Fucci cannot receive the death penalty. He gets a chance at life. Tristan didn't get that chance. The years will go on for him, but our reality is that this horrific nightmare will never end. Our hearts will break every single day for the rest of our lives because Tristan is no longer here. Thank you for your time and consideration now and in the heartbreaking years to come. Tristan Bailey-Strom. Thank you, Your Honor.
state in the finance victim impact statement?
Your Honor, we would call Susan Thistleton.
Have a seat. Make yourself comfortable, ma'am. Just that microphone so that you're not right up on it.
That's good?
Yes, perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Susan Thistleton, and I'm a teacher at Patriot Oaks and the mother of Tristan Bailey's classmate, Cameron Thistleton. I'm reading you an abbreviated version of my impact statement. I have submitted my letter and my son's letter, and I hope you have a chance to review. May 9th, 2021 was one of the worst days for my family that I could ever recall. What started out as a fun, relaxing day on the water with my children for Mother's Day turned into every parent's worst nightmare. First, we got the text, "Has anyone seen Tristan?" My first thought, she snuck out, fell asleep at her friend's house, and just hadn't woken up. Her parents will hear from her any minute. Hours went by. My children and I waited for updates. Our next update was that she might have been seen with Aiden Fucci. My heart sank. I didn't know Aiden. I never met him, but I knew of him. And right then and there, I knew it wasn't going to end well. I stayed glued to my phone, neighbors, coworkers, and friends, praying for good news. Then news came that her body was found in the wooded area. Now I was faced with the task of telling my 13-year-old son that his friend and classmate was dead. He would immediately know who was responsible. We all did. Why was this so hard for me? My son Cameron came to Patriot Oaks as a fourth grader. We had moved to Florida from Colorado. Cameron had some academic issues, and he had some behavioral issues, and we were constantly trying to help him with those. His behavior often alienated him from other kids and made him feel inferior to others. In all that time, Cameron had one constant and immediate friend, one person who never judged him, never alienated him, and never made him feel worse than he already did, and that was Tristan. She was a constant source of support, friendship, and positivity that Cameron needed. She made him want to do better, to be better. She was his true cheerleader. I didn't fully understand the impact she had on his life until she was gone. When I broke the news to Cameron, he was crushed. He sobbed, he asked why, he got pissed. He asked so many questions and had so many wonderings. Mom, did she suffer? Did she know he was trying to kill her? Do you think she was cold? Aren't boys supposed to protect girls? I could not answer any of his questions, so I just held him tight and cried with him. How do you begin to process those questions? Cameron missed several days of school after that. He could not hold it together. The anger consumed him. He just could not understand how anyone could be so evil to hurt someone in such a violent way. He was very angry. We attended counseling for months. My husband and I were so worried that our son, who had come such a long way since fourth grade, thanks to Tristan, would slide backwards. He has struggled, but he has worked to be the light. He knows he cannot let anger win. Tristan would be incredibly mad at him. Cameron no longer has behavioral or academic issues. He is thriving. And I know in my gut and in my heart, Tristan's constant source of love, support, and friendship in the 4 years that she was his classmate played a critical part in getting him to where he is today. Our family thinks of Tristan daily. We try to do good in her name. We just can't help but think how much better we could do if she was still with us. If only I could thank her for the kindness and the grace that she showed my son every single day. She truly embodied the quote, "In a world where you can be anything, be kind." And for that, this mom is incredibly thankful for the amount of work that she did in such a short period of time. We are devastated
that she is no longer with us, to be the bright light that she brought to Cameron. Anything less than life in prison would be an insult to the goodness that Tristan brought to our world. What he took away from us is 100 times more devastating than what he could ever add to this world. We will continue to fight the good fight, to be the light, and to do good deeds in Tristan's name. We will not let hate, evil, or violence win, ever. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have time for another.
Let me ask him.
Hi, Your Honor. Am I loud enough?
I think you're good. Yeah.
Okay. My name is Jennifer Van Dalden. My family has known the Bailey family for over 10 years. Tristan Bailey is like a daughter to me and like a sister to my daughter, Madeline. I consider Stacy and Forrest to be two of my closest friends. The pain from losing Tristan in such a violent way is not something you ever get over. It is something heavy that will weigh on my heart every day, and I will carry that pain forever. When I close my eyes, I think about the pain she must have suffered. That night, and I wish so very much that I could take that from her. I always pray to myself that in those final moments, she was able to close her eyes and see the faces of family and friends who loved her dearly, rather than the person capable of something so horrific. My new normal since May 9th of 2021 has become living with diagnosed depression, anxiety, migraine and cluster headaches, many panic attacks, difficulty sleeping, and extreme fatigue. This loss has caused so much stress to my entire family. My 11-year-old son, who was 9 years old at the time, and Tristan spent time together to and from school for many years. They also spent time at family dinners, swimming, and so on. My son always picked on his older sister and her friends. In his third grade year of school, his innocence was stripped from him. On Monday, May 10th, 2021, I asked Oliver to wear white to school in remembrance of Tristan. He went into his room to change, and he didn't come back out. I found him crying and so distraught about Tristan being gone. He was so worried that Tristan didn't know that he loved her like a sister. He missed that entire week of school. Because, of course, how is a third grader supposed to cope with this kind of violent loss committed by a child who also attended his school? My daughter, Madeline, was in eighth grade at the time. She was very afraid to return to school and missed many days. She failed a depression questionnaire at her routine pediatrician visit. She started having frequent debilitating headaches, even into her ninth grade year, that caused her to miss school and many assignments. In May of 2022, a few days after the one-year anniversary of Tristan's murder, Madeline had a severe headache in mass in church. She stood up, passed out, and began having seizures. She was taken by ambulance and held for observation. This was most likely stress-induced. My once happy-go-lucky little girl, who was fearless and independent, was now waking up screaming from nightmares, crying every day, not sleeping alone, feeling sick and overwhelmed by daily life, and was just overall sad missing her friend. Not just Tristan's life was taken that day. A piece of everyone close to her was taken as well. I used to think about cute stories I'd share at her wedding one day. We used to joke about it all the time, embarrassing stories, I would say. Now we'll never have that day. I hear new songs on the radio and think, she'll never hear this. There will be no more thoughtful birthday texts, no more Starbucks runs, no more hugs, no more air hearts before she went into her house when I was dropping her off. Not a day goes by without tears. Life is forever not as bright as before. I wish every day that I could hug her one more time, but even then, that would not be enough. Aiden Fucci, that day, a piece of me died as well. My happiness will never be the same, and my ability to be carefree is gone.
Five minutes till 5. This is probably a good stopping point for the day. We'll come back at, if I could have the attorneys here by 10 till 9, and then we'll begin, continue with the victim impact statements at 9 a.m., and then you'll be ready to proceed on your case.
Thank you.
Okay. We're adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow.
That wraps up the 5th segment of coverage of the sentencing of Aiden Fucci. There's more to come in this 11-part series. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.